Eternal Father, as we gather again to worship you in spirit and in truth, be guided by thy Spirit, have all things brought to our remembrance that you would have us to know, to be brought into knowledge of all truth. Pray that you will grant unto each one of thy people throughout this great nation, all the nations of thy kingdom, the energizing of spirit that you'll awaken them out of their apathy and out of their sleep, and apply with all the energies which will be bestowed upon them as thy children the work of building thy kingdom, of breaking the powers of darkness, of lifting up thy standard. We pray for a great spiritual wave of understanding that shall rekindle racial self-respect, relationship to thy responsibility that you have laid upon them, responsibility of thy sons to build thy kingdom. We pray, our Father, as we meditate upon the situations that relate in the ancient background of our race, you will cause us to understand the principles of divine law, that you will cause us to recognize the patterns of biological law and the relationship of each one of us to the background of heredity. Pray, our Father, that you will grant unto us an understanding of thy word and teach us how to apply truth for the overcoming of the darkness in this hour of great need. As we commit ourselves to thy hand, we pray for thy church, an invisible institution made up of all those who are thy household, across all lines of division that may mark their division among the denominations of Christendom. May there be a great union of spirit in the truth. May there become a great awakening inside the spiritual center of the nations of thy kingdom. The church may become a true oracle of thy will and help in the deliverance of thy household. For the nations of thy kingdom, may they awake out of their sleep. May they nationally stand to perform their task shoulder to shoulder in greatness, to put down the powers of communism, the forces of evil, and to eliminate the powers of evil within their nations that would destroy the kingdom. So we say, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, and thine we ask it. Amen. Tonight we are speaking on the subject of the races and the flood, because this is the most vital subject and must be understood by every Bible student. In fact, never has it been as important as it is today in these United States that every individual in position of political leadership, that the governor of every state, that the congressmen and senators of every state understand and know these basic Bible truths. It is important that all those who represent the various districts of these United States in areas of legislation, as well as in the responsibility of leadership, should and must know for the salvation of our society the difference between truth and error. And we today are fighting a psychological warfare which is directed against the nations of God's kingdom, a warfare in which the weapons are error, skillfully and cunningly woven together. Error which is intended to subordinate your society to the mongrelization which they have planned for your race, which intends to also superimpose over this great nation of God's kingdom a program of integration with all nations until the white nations of the Western world have been subordinated inside the conspiracy of the United Nations to an overpowering and outnumbering force that would place all the yellow and black races over you and all the powers of the communist world over the Christian nations. So when we talk to you tonight about the flood, it's not going back into a period of time or into a stage in history that is no longer important to you. It is very important to you. In fact, it is so basically important that when properly understood, one doesn't have to rest with the scriptures in order to find the right position as it relates to the race problem and as it relates to the problem in your nation of attempting today to mongrelize all of the peoples in this land through the processes of complete integration. And when we tell you that the design of those who advocate integration is mongrelization, the mixture of the races, we're taking no license from the very authorities in which the Supreme Court quoted Myrdal of Sweden and Du Bois, the Negro Jewish communists, who they have quoted in their own opinions as they expressed their opinions and made their decisions. These very men advocate that integration is to bring about the great steps of racial amalgamation, and that out of the intermixture of races will come a solution to the world's problem. Thus it is that both the socialists from Sweden and the Negro Jewish combination socialist Du Bois, a member of the Communist Party, quoted by Earl Warren and other justices, these men clearly cite in the very book cited by the Supreme Court that their goal for integration is ultimately mongrelization and amalgamation. If the Supreme Court justices in their procedure on integration did not mean that they intended ultimately the mongrelization of races, then they should not have quoted from these books in their decision. If they did mean the mongrelization of these races, they should be removed from their office, they should be impeached, and new justices should be placed upon the High Court of these United States. It is not a principle of hatred. It is a principle of common sense. In our discussion last week on the antiquity of mankind and people upon the face of the earth, in which we utilize the reservoir of anthropological evidence, we showed you that there had been intelligent people walking on earth with weapons and possessing a culture 1.5 million years ago. That we have, without any question, 600,000 years of Turanian history, which we can follow and trace, and which anthropology, now joining with the artifacts and archaeological evidence, is established. We can go back 400 and some thousand years in the panoramas of the fragments of ancient Assyrian history. We have 243,000 years of unbroken Sumerian history in the records that we pose inside the British Museum on the tablets of clay. We can point out to you that modern archaeology has been doing an excellent job, and so have the anthropologists, as they have been screening the earth and have been discovering more and more evidences of antiquity. And this does not find any conflict with the scriptures, though it may conflict with some very old and ancient theology, and a great number of theologians today have a very limited field of knowledge concerning these areas which they should be well informed in: anthropology, ethnic history, and archaeology. We want you to know that some of their archaic ideas included trying to put the whole world together in 6,000 years and 6 days, and put the whole universe together in 6 days, and they had 6,000 years from that time to this. Of course, we have already cast aside this premise, and as we in the previous message discussed with you, we have proven that there were millions of years in what God was doing in the earth since catastrophes of the first and second verse of Genesis, the recreations, and then finally the seventh day creation, in which you were a part as the Adamic race and the final household in the earth. The other races existed, as we have established, before you did. There were Turanians upon the face of the earth, or the livestock of the Asiatic peoples that extended all over Asia, and its steppes extended even down into the heart of Africa and extended into islands of the sea and lands now beneath the waters of both Atlantic and Pacific. Areas like Easter Island stand out as evidences of the last remnants of an ancient civilization whose great walls, like the walls of China, run down under the waters of the Pacific, and with it great buildings and mighty citadels are now beneath the water of the Pacific. The lands that were once the lands of ancient Atlantis are located somewhere between the Western Hemisphere and that of the areas of Africa and Europe. The word Atlantan, so important to the ancient Egyptians and so well known that even Plato writes about it, the story and the history of the peoples who had migrated from the sinking continents as their land was driven by earthquakes, and as the water rushed into the great subterranean fires and blew the ribs off of their mountains, all of which are a part of the story in the ancient books of Horus of the migration of the Egyptians from a land that plunged beneath the waters of the sea, while volcanic eruption and the waters and steam shattered mountains and created ancient catastrophe. All of which are talking about lands now beneath the waters of the ocean and are describing things that happened in the ancient world. Now we are no longer going to say that these things did not happen, as modern archaeology has been unearthing the evidences of it. And even the study of the ocean floor and archaeology beneath the ocean floor takes on new bent as we uncover the remnants of ancient cities. And as we go down into the area of the Azores, we discover that these volcanic areas show that at one time high above the water on a great flat continent, now beneath the waters of the Atlantic, the Azores, and the various groups of in this particular area of volcanoes were once high above the ocean surface. For as we know, the flowing of lava does not, my friends, take place for miles below water. When there's the eruption of a volcano beneath the water, the lava just piles up until it sticks finally above the surface of the ocean. The lava will not run for miles underwater. So these long lava sparks that we find out here in the Atlantic, on the subfloor of the Atlantic, prove that all that land where this lava sparks run for 18 and 20 miles was once above the surface of the ocean. And that great areas of that ocean, once above the ocean floor, provide a whole continent whose pattern in history are tied to the story of the ancients. Now we're going to come back to that in a little while, because there's biblical evidence concerning some of these things. And there is a world of evidence in the patterns of ancient semantics. For in the periods of what we call the pre-flood world, there's a lot of things of history that are of great importance. We have established for you that the Adamic race was the last race placed upon the face of the earth. The Adamic race is the white race. The Adamic race is God's own household, transplanted from the earth according to the earth, from the heavens according to the authority of the Scriptures. That they were celestial beings now embodied in the offspring of Adam, who is the offspring of God. That Adam was a race in the flesh, in the earth, and that Adam was the father of this household, and that's why over 500 and some odd times the word Adam is used all through the Old Testament when talking about the race from whence you've come. Adamites were the white men. They were the divine race. They were the Adamic race. They were the race of Seth. They were the race from whence Abraham comes. They are the race from whence every white Western nation of the world today has emerged, and we may trace with accuracy the migrations of these people and the patterns of their history, as we will do in another message. But it's important for us to know that we have biological origins of all of the various races over a period of great antiquity, showing that there existed before Adam Asiatics and Negroids in the earth. As we have told you, radiocarbon plus now the use of carbon 40 has established clearly that the antiquity of these various races and race groups can be identified by their fossils, by their strata, by their campfires, by the age of the fossils and their bones, and we can do it with accuracy. We know 73,000 years ago they were burying Negroes in the caves of Kilimanjaro. We know that in a period that stretches back 14,000 years ago, Asiatics were being buried in Peking Hill outside of Peking, inside of China, and also Chicken Bone Hill not far from this ancient capital. We know that going back historically, that is far back in the history of your race, as 7,400 years. That's when Adam left the areas of Eden, 7,400 years ago, or 5,400 years before Christ, in a few years. We know that we have this history of the white race, and we can establish no history or connections of their migrations before this period of some 5,400 B.C. We can clearly establish also that the movement of the sons of Adam were recorded by the ancient Asiatics. We may establish that there were unusual conditions existing in Asia in a period that preceded the catastrophes of the flood. Last week, as we talked to you about the antiquity of peoples in Asia, though the Turanians go back 600,000 years, their civilizations were highly developed as far back as 14,000 years ago. There was a continual degeneration inside of Asia and all of ancient Asiatic cultures as they left the patterns of monotheism under Luciferian influence, had created and worshipped gods of darkness, many of them unassimilatable offspring of violations of divine law, which are a part also of later biblical records. Thus it is, many of these monstrosities and demon forces became the gods of ancient Asia. Whenever they dealt with your race, they called you the children of one god. In ancient India, in the background of its peoples, they said that the great god Indra was the mighty god of creation of outer space, and his Vedic white children, called Manu, tall white ones, were the embodiment in earth of his family, and the Manu were the white man, or the tall white ones. Another word used coming out of ancient Persia was Aryan, meaning the white sons of the eternal god of the heavens. Another area of the philosophy and theology of ancient India talked about the ultimate destiny that had been prophesied by Indra, the mighty one, that he would be embodied in the earth and that he would save his people and through them redeem the earth for a new pattern as he, the Redeemer, would come. And the word that was used for that was Krishna, referring to the embodiment of a god from outer space who would be locked in conflict with their own pagan gods, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, and Kali. And thus their theology was attributed to the white Vedic forefathers whose writings were the heights of culture and produced and joined with the Aryan culture, produced the highest age of all India's ancient history. It was the Aryans that produced this in ancient Persia. In fact, you can go down through the history of India and the Aryan white Persian leadership that produced, bring down to the time of Jahanagar, the highest, most intellectual leadership that India ever had. We go into the pattern of the writings of ancient China and find history that is akin to yours, talking about these tall white ones, these Manu, these sons of the Eternal, who lived in the high places of the mountain lands and the great mountain plateaus, who occasionally had crossed their land, who set up great mighty monuments of measurement high in the steppes behind their country and behind the high mountain wall, they called it, which was the Himalayas, and in Quebec, where you established the great Dorab rings of observation with monolithic monuments, almost exactly like those that you set up in Stonehenge and in Dinab and in other places similarly. We point out to you, however, that in all of this measure, your race was known from the hour of its being seen and witnessed to the earth by nations with whom it came in contact. A people of one God, monotheistic, endowed with a great knowledge of the stars and of the heavens. A people who had astronomy, who had a written language, who had great intelligent wisdom, whose understanding of the laws of the fulcrum and the application of the science and mechanics so essential to the conquest of the earth surpassed anything that they had ever known. And if you go down into ancient Egypt, you'll discover that its discussion concerning your race and its coming and its background and history times it exactly for the synchronization of the events of the Bible. Now, the reason why we tell you that this is basically important, there is a teaching that extends throughout the large part of the denominations of Christendom, which they received when they went to Bible school and to Bible college. This, of course, has been set up by a sort of a passing reading and a supposed understanding of the scriptures, in which they cited that the descendants of Adam lived on the earth until the days of Noah, and that there was a flood that covered the whole earth and drowned everybody upon the face of the earth except Noah and his family. And that after the periods of the flood, Noah and his family emerged. Nobody else was left alive on the earth but Noah, his wife, his three sons, and their wives. And they therefore started to repopulate the earth. And they will vary in their estimations of where the time of this flood was, from some period of 2,434 years B.C. unto the most extreme point that they're willing to place it back is 2,900 years before Christ. So from 2,900 B.C. to 2,434 B.C. is the time that they're willing to classify the flood. Now, it could be placed much more accurately in that, but I'm pointing out that giving all the latitude to all the denominations in Christendom, this is when they tell you the flood took place. Now, upon the basis of this flood, they tell you that from the sons of Noah, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, came all the people that are upon the face of the earth. They tell us, and they think they are biblically correct when they tell us this, that Ham, Shem, and Japheth fathered all the peoples on the face of the earth. They tell us by a disobedience to social law that Ham was cursed and was turned into a Negro, and that the Negroes came from Ham. They tell us that the Turanians came, or the Asiatics came from Japheth, because he went over and settled in Asia, and that the white people came from Shem. And they would like us to believe that Ham, Shem, and Japheth fathered the three different races that are upon the face of the earth, and that this was the origin of races, and by these men came all the races on the face of the earth. Though they would tell us today, even in the South, where they would like to be Bible-believing Christians and still stand for segregation, they tell us that all these people emerged from Noah, but God wanted them to be separate because he had ordered and ordained that these races emerge, and therefore that God did not want them to absorb the Hamites because of the evil of Ham, and that this is the reason why they're not to intermingle with Negroes, but they had a common origin in the house of Noah. And therefore, they have everybody on the face of the earth coming from Adam, and everybody redescending from Noah and his family. And here's where the propaganda experts of mongolization and integration come along and say, well, if everybody came out of the family, then there isn't anything wrong with them all going back together and being integrated to form again one family. But this is error. I'm going to tell you, in the first place, the flood didn't cover all the nations of the world and all the cities of the world. It'd be 6 miles deep over Los Angeles if it had. I'm going to tell you that the waters of the flood not only did not cover all of the lands and all the countries and all the peoples of the earth, but whole portions of the earth never had a flood. You say this isn't biblical, but it is biblical. I can point out to you, by no stretch of the imagination, can we lay to the charge of Noah and his three sons the origin of the Negroes who were being buried in the caves of Kilimanjaro 73,000 years before Adam. Under no stretch of the imagination can we say the Asiatics came from Japheth when they were Asiatics in the earth 600,000 years, now 1.5 million years before there was any sign or any record of the Adamic race. When we say 600,000 years, we have some accuracy of lines of migration, and we have, when we go back 243,000 years, historical patterns to show that the Asiatic races were in the earth before the days of Adam. Now, Adam was a white man.
and the placing of a white race in the earth, it no, by no process ever caused any Asiatic or Negro peoples to come out of the Adamic race. God is the creator of the universe and all the races and peoples that are therein. But he is the father of the white race who what his own posterity transferred from heaven to earth to build his kingdom. This is his prerogative. This is the way he wants to do it. This is the way that he was to develop and is developing the mercy of his grace to provide leadership, to provide eventually a spiritual awakened and achieved achievement known as thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Now let me point out some things which I think are of great significance to this matter. When you go back into the records of the conditions that preceded the flood, you will note in ancient Egyptian records that there had migrated into Egypt in a period of time that long preceded the flood, the coming of one Pehonet, or the one you know as Enoch. Later, when writing about him, the Egyptians changed his name to Hermes. And he was referred to as Hermes, rather the Greeks changed the word to Hermes, which is a Greek interpretation of Pohenok, who was known in ancient Egypt as Enoch, and who was the builder of the great city of On, and was one of the architect builders of the first great pyramid. You'll note that there came with him Jobab, or Job, who was none other than the Job who wrote the book of Job under inspiration of the scriptures. That Job and Enoch were the two great wise men that in the history of Egypt came into their land with 144,000 people and not only conquered their land without the use of the sword, but applied themselves to the building of this ancient city. At the time they came, they were referred to as the children of Osiris, the call of Ra, and that Ra was the mighty God of light, the creator of the universe, that these were the children of the sun, and they didn't mean the literal sun, but they meant a God of light and knowledge and wisdom of the world. The temple priests of ancient Egypt worshipped Set and Thoth and the pagan deities of darkness. Strangely enough, there was a great group of ancient Egyptians who, remembering their ancient past and quoting from the books of Horus and the writings that are identified with the first Khufu, which was the title of ancient pharaohs inside of Egypt. There isn't one Khufu. This is an error upon the part of those who call themselves Egyptologists when Khufu was the leader and the name of Pharaoh when the first emperor of the Egyptian people with Horus migrated into the present land of Egypt into an antiquity 11,000 years ago. When they crossed the upper part of the northern African continent, there was not a desert land as it now is. It was flowing with deep grasses that was way up to their waist, and there were grazing numbers of cattle, wild, and all types of animals, and they crossed from a bridge which had extended out to the land that was now crumbling under the impact of earthquakes and fires, under the judgment of a violation of satanic interference with the earth and the attempted mongrelization of its peoples. Read the ancient book of Horus, and you will find how they had left the worship of the great God of the heavens, Yahweh Ptah, and he was setting up temples of mongrelization in the low hills and wanted everybody to worship the fallen archangel. The doctrines of the Seti and the worship of Set and of Thoth and the symbols of the dark gods from Budas over Africa, the father of Voodooism, are all a part of ancient Egyptian lore as to whence they came and how they migrated from land plunging beneath the water. How others also had migrated, and one king who had set up his power in ancient Mesopotamia had emerged also out of this land and had been the king of peoples beneath the waters. Now, the pyramid was built before the flood. The period for the building of the pyramid is attributed at between 5,000 and 4,000 B.C. The commencing of the structure of the pyramid is estimated, according to Egyptian history and Egyptian chronology, to have taken place at a period of time that's about 4,800 B.C. by accurate chronology, not the Usher chronology, which is an error. Again, I tell you, if you have a Schofield Bible and you turn back in the concordance to chronology, it will tell you there that Usher's chronology at 4,004 B.C. for Adam is not necessarily accurate, but was convenient because of the arrangement of events. It tells you at the same time under chronology that the Alexandrian manuscript, which places 5,500 B.C. for the period of Adam being placed in the earth, 5,400 B.C. for his exodus out of Eden, is closer to right. And also there is others like Hales and others whose ancient measures and whose chronology are more accurate. They tell you in the back of the concordance of the average Schofield edition of the King James Version of the Bible and in many other chronologies that we have the evidence of these patterns of measure, that therefore it isn't essentially accurate because Usher's chronology is 1,400 years shorter than the others, and the others are probably more accurate. Well, we know this is true. We know that 1,400 years were taken out of the king list chronologies by Jewry in order to throw off the prophecies that were in the ancient books of Seth and the early books known as the Book of Adam and Eve concerning the coming of Messiah. It was prophesied from the time that Adam left the garden, it would be 5,400 years until the embodiment of God is Messiah in the earth. And they wanted to change and make the prophecy as it related to Christ of none effect. And so after the birth of Christ and after his ascension, the Jews interfered with the ancient text and changed it 1,400 years in chronology. And this would have placed the embodiment of Christ a period of some 500 and some odd years ago. And of course, this was their design to show that Christ was not Messiah. This is known by theological students, but for some reason they don't discuss this outside of seminaries among their people, and they're afraid that the chronology is that important. The average people never look at the date at the top of the page anyhow, and so it's more important that you have a truth and have accuracy than you have the convenience of arrangement of dates. They point out to you, therefore, that the Adamic race and its migrations have very basic importance on the whole story. Where did Enoch come from? One of the early birthplaces, or the area from whence the Adamic race is first visualized as spreading out on the earth by even the Asiatics and others, is from way up in the mountains of Chinese Turkestan, or what we might call Eastern Turkestan and the Tashian Mountains. Here is a great area known as now the Pamir Valley, once was the Pamir Plateau. This plateau, high, ringed by very low mountains, but high up, according to its height, they were at great height. But above the plateau floor, the rim was not very high. But underneath this great plateau was an underground sea of great size. The conditions in this valley somewhat protected, though the altitude was quite high, from other areas of the weather conditions of the Himalayas and the high country. But in this country lived the Adamic race after their having been driven out of Eden, which was to the eastward. We are well aware also that in this area that the migration came for the earliest of your race. They came down and dwelt first by the Persian Sea. And from the Persian Seas, they migrated down into the land we call ancient Palestine. The first of these migrations involved also the so-called nomadic shepherd kings with their sciences and with their knowledge of things that have been taught to them that go back before the days of Noah to the days of Seth. Now, one of the descendants of Seth, as you will note, and they is Enoch. Enoch, the builder of the pyramid and the builder of the great city of On in ancient Egypt. That Enoch was a man of great righteousness. He came of the Seth race. This is the household of Adam and Eve through Seth, long after the violations of the divine law have been rectified in the mind of God. So we find Seth, who is the acceptable seed in the likeness of Adam, and from Seth comes the son Heber, comes the son, rather, Enoch, and Enoch was a man of great knowledge and great wisdom, and of course it tells you in the scripture that he learned so much in wisdom and knowledge that finally God took him into the heavens and into the far areas of the universe. He never knew death. We have the treasures of the book of Enoch, the pillars of Enoch, the secrets of Enoch. In it we have learned more about the patriarchal wisdom and the special experiences which he had as God ushered him into his presence, as he traveled in great craft across the great areas of space, as he tells us about the number of planets in our solar system, and all the things that were shown to him, plus also the instruction he received of God. Of the building of the great monument to be a measuring witness for the Most High God, of the city that he was to build in the land of Egypt. And we go back to ancient history. Job and Enoch built the first city called Ur-Usalem in the land called later Palestine. It was from this area that they migrated with their great flocks and their people, taking first 144,000 Sabaoth and leaving the rest of the people in ancient Jerusalem. They migrated down to Egypt. And of course, here again, the powers of Egypt would have waged war against these great wise men coming as they did into their land, coming with their flocks, but also with their knowledge and their wisdom. And of course, one of the great and ancient stories of the wisdom of these people were that they carried the symbol of the eternal. And a great reflecting golden disc was being carried in front of them, a concave disc like a great lens. And in the instance that the armies of Pharaoh came charging out under its dark priests against this great white race intrusion, as they might have called it, into the land of Egypt to go down to that site by the Nile, then a wasteland with nothing there to establish not only on, but eventually the great site of the pyramids and to accomplish their objectives. And they turned this great golden disc, reflecting the light of the sun, towards the armies of Pharaoh, and they fell back in fear, blinded by the intensity of the light and the intense heat that radiated from it. And they said, surely this people have conquered with the eye of God. Later, they were to cite concerning your race that they were the children of Osiris, the Ka of Ra, and that this was a household of prophecy, and that when they had migrated from the ancient land, it had been prophesied that the white race, or a race of Yahweh Pucha, the gods of the heavens, would come into their land, build another great pyramid in pyramid symbol like the ancient ones of Atlantis, build a great city for knowledge and wisdom, and teach them the identity of the eternal God and his law. That's why there is incorporated in ancient Egyptian theology so many things that relate to yours. The reason why I point this out is that the pyramid was built before the flood. And that while it was being built in the days of Enoch and Job, which are existing according to even biblical record by any theologian way back before the flood, they built the city of On, the city of the priesthoods of the eternal God, the white race patriarchal priesthood. Now, after the flood, I want you to remember, long after the flood is over, one of the descendants of Shem, which is the one branch of the Adamic race which was not absorbed by any other people, the descendants of Shem were Heber, and Heber is the father of all of the Hebrews, which are all the white race who carry his name. And Abraham, or Abram, descended out of his household, and Terah was his father. We're going to go back, however. The reason why we tell you this is that when Abraham went down into Egypt, it was still there. When the sons of Abraham, who were Isaac, and then Jacob, his grandson, and then the sons of Jacob, including Joseph, went in the centuries that followed back down into Egypt, the Egyptians were still there. So the Egyptians were in Egypt before the flood. The priesthood of the white race that had come down from the high Teshan mountain plateaus of Upper Pamir in the days of the first migration, in the days of Enoch and Job, who, of course, were the children of the first migrators and who went down to Egypt to perform their heavenly mission. So we can show you that when Joseph was in Egypt, the temples of On were still there. And when Joseph, who was sold into Egypt, but their destiny was involved in this, later to be raised as the advisor to the emperor, and as Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had selected as his advisor Joseph because of his divine knowledge and wisdom, has got to be sold upon him. It's a matter of Egyptian history to this day. I have in my library a scarab that came out of King Tut II. This scarab is the stamp of the house of Joseph, showing the seal of the emperor as he stamped this and used this as an indicator of his authority. And I have one of the originals of those that existed so many thousand years ago as the stamp of Joseph. No question about Joseph being in Egypt. No question about the fact that he went down to this great white city of On. These were his compatriots by race. He married Asenath, daughter of Potiphar, of the priest of On. He didn't marry an Egyptian. He married a white woman who was the daughter of a priest of a great racial temple of the worship of the true God and of the wisdom and understanding in Egypt. You say, well, is this important to this subject? Yes, because the white race, like Egyptians, had been resident down in Egypt before the flood. They were there after the flood, so the flood never touched Egypt at all. If the flood had touched Egypt, there wouldn't have been any of these temples of On priesthood left, and there wouldn't be any Egyptians down there either. Where do you think the Egyptians would have come from in the short period between the times of Noah and the days of Abram in such great numbers? More than that, how could they carry out the continuing dynasty of a king line that had been there thousands of years, whose prophets and whose kings go way back to the days of their migration from land that went down beneath the waters of the Atlantic? The student of ethnology and ancient history is forced to know, with the archaeological evidence and the records that we have, that the peoples of Egypt have descended down from peoples that existed before the flood. Now the word for flood, where it says it covered the whole earth, is the Hebrew word Arat, that means that country, E-R-A-T-Z, Arat, that country. We point out to you that in the days when Cain killed Abel, he was driven out of the areas where Adam and Eve lived in that upper Tabim basin of the high mountains of the Pamir. And so Cain was driven out. He says, my punishment is greater than I can bear. I have been driven off of the face of the earth. The word is again Arat. But we know he wasn't driven off of the earth because we read that he went eastward of Eden into the land of Nod. He married him a Sumerian woman of the Turanian line. He established the Akkad kingdom. And his son Sargon was one of the rulers. If Cain himself did not first establish the name Sargon, the ancient Sumerian king lines and their existence. So we know that when we say that Cain said, I was driven off the face of the earth, that he didn't mean off the earth, he meant out of that country. Thus it is, the waters of the flood also covered all of that country. And that's where the flood took place. What country? Where the Adamic race was existing and where a great conspiracy to destroy them was underway. I told you last week that it was quite evident that the ancient peoples in China had also some great monsters there. There were men that were 1.5 times the size of the giants of Java and twice the size of normal men of the human race. And I read to you out of even Mr. Coon's Anthropology and some of the others, the record of the antiquity of these people. And then, of course, strangely enough, the biblical quotation out of a modern anthropology that said, even as the Bible said, there was giants in the land in those days. Why? Because scientists from Germany, scientists from America, scientists from Holland had found and dug up the fossil bones of giants twice the size of normal men that lived in the steppes of Asia and the areas of China. Now we point out to you what the Bible says about these areas before the flood. Remembering that before the time that the Bible is here discussing, Enoch and Job have migrated to Egypt. They built great cities, and they're living down there. Now, the rest of the white race is living in the upper Tarim Basin so far, except for some of them who are down by the shores of the Persian Sea. We read concerning the record here on the flood of what caused it, and in the sixth chapter of the book of Genesis, it said that there was beginning to multiply on the face of the earth both the Adamites, and also there were daughters born unto them. And the word in the Hebrew in the second chapter, and I want to correct any other record that you may have, the Nephilim, it's translated the sons of God, sort of the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives, all of which they chose. These are not the sons of Yahweh. These are the Baali mongrels, known as Nephilim. The word Nephilim, if you go back into the Hebrew, means these are the offspring of angels that didn't keep their first estate. If in your Christian Bible you go in the book of Jude, to the records of Jude, you'll find that they were angelic hosts. They were beings that inhabited the vastness of God's domain, that didn't keep their first estate, and embodied in the earth, they intermingled with the ancient races of earth and produced an unassimilatable people. Among them were a great number of giants. We will not go into the scientific reason for this tonight because it would take too much time. Though it is related to the pattern of heredity and to the energies involved in mitosis and the actual original size of the energy field and energy remembrance of the particular species that were involved. It tells you right here inside of the book of Genesis that these Nephilim were seizing and taking wives of all of which they chose of the men, which were the Adamites. Now, therefore, this was a mongrelization. It was a part of a grand conspiracy to absorb and mongrelize all your race. God warned Noah about this, and the ancient Zohar and other records show this. He said, in order to preserve you, I'm going to have your race preserved and destroy those that would mix or mongrelize it. Thus, the instruction for the building of the ark, which was given to Noah, was for Noah and his wife and his sons and their wives. God, with omniscience, knowing that the mongrelization and the curse was going to have contaminated almost all of the other part of the strain of the Adam race that was living in that high mountain chain. Now, the scripture says they were giants in the earth in those days after these Nephilim intermingled with the daughters of men, and they bare children unto them, and they became mighty men, some of whose names are in renown. The scripture also says that the wickedness of these giants, of these people, was so great that every imagination of their heart was evil continually. It tells us that they sought to mongrelize and destroy. They would kill with violence, and they were Canabaels, or from the word we get today, cannibals, start from priests of Baal and Canabaal, and the monsters who were then eating human flesh. So when the flood came, the flood was to descend upon that area, and Noah was wise enough to believe God when no one else thought that there could ever be any great inundation in this great high mountain plateau, so high above and so far from the Persian Sea. Today I have in my library a great number of volumes that deal with the geology and the physical patterns of its terrain. The reports of eminent geologists upon this area, photographs that relate to the area. Today in the upper Tarim Basin today, Tarim Basin, where once the great Pamir Plateau extended, was a subterranean sea of great depth. We also know that the areas that were involved in the Teshan Mountains were of great size and length. And here once it existed some of the ancient cities, three cities in this plateau known as the ancient cities of the Teshan Mountains, or the golden cities of Asia. Well, these cities probably were providing a great core to these forces trying to mongrelize your race. Now I want to call your attention to what God says. He told Noah the size of the ark to build. He also told him what to do. He told him that He was to fashion it so large, and he was to make it in such a way that he would be able to save all of the fauna and the wildlife in the land so that it be not destroyed from all the earth. He told him to take 7 male and 7 female of all the clean and eatable species. And then he told him to take the male and female of all the other species that existed in the land. And they were to be adequately housed in the size of this ark, which he was told to build. Someone says, you believe that? Yes, I believe that. But I'm going to prove to you that the length of the ark was 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits, the height of it 30 cubits. But by no stretch of the imagination did this apply to all the earth or all the animals upon it, and the tremendous task there would have been of gathering all of this mighty zoological collection in order to get them in the ark. I want you to know that one man in his lifetime, with his sons to help him, couldn't have gathered 7 male and 7 female of all the species on the face of the earth, nor could they have gathered species of all the eatable, 7 male and 7 female of all the eatable species, and 2 of everything else. I want you to know that no ship the length of this one that Noah built could have housed all of these animals, all of the deer and all of the wild beastie and all of the elephants and the giraffes and all the animals that were involved. In fact, today, modern zoology has classified the fact that there is distinctly over 3 million species in the earth tonight. That means that 3 million species, with the exception of what is also classified under this as the species which are aqua species or water species, the separation of the water species imputes that there still exists among both the mammals and among the areas of life that would have had to have been preserved, that would not have been able to survive in water, there is over 2,100 known species that exist upon the face of the earth in the mammal variety, and that among the 3 million species that are to be found in subspecies and the species that would have existed before the days of Adam and are still here upon the earth, they would have had over 2 million of these creatures to have housed in the ark. But more than this, this would be if they only had taken one of each. But they had to have male and female, so they would have had to have a minimum of 4 million species. But now 7 male and 7 female of all the clean ones, they would have had to have had somewhere around some 14 to 15 million species inside the ark, or animals inside the ark. Now, even at the minimum of estimation, they would have had to have had a fleet of ships larger than the American and British merchant marine and its combined navies put together. All the navies and all the merchant marine of all the cities and nations of the Western world would not have been able to have housed the menagerie that Noah and his sons would have had to have had on the ark. And I want you to know that it tells me here that when it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. And I'm told that it was the 600th year of Noah's life. In the second month, in the 17th day, that same day, the fountains of the deep were broken up and the windows of heaven were opened. The fountains of the deep were caused by a great earthquake that caused the whole shelf floor of this Bamir high plateau to turn endwise, break into particles by the earthquake, and sink. When it did, the great waters of the subterranean sea were floating the ark almost instantaneously. Whole cities and lands accompanied along with this with a great inundation. The earthquake had been the result of an intense low atmospheric pressure area. Also coincident with it was the tremendous downpour, the breaking up of the fountains of the deep, the descent of the water from on above. We are told that for 40 days it rained. And remember that it was the 600th year of Noah's life in the second month, the 17th day. Now, the reason why I point this out is that we read concerning how long it was till the water dried up. I first find that before Noah could get off of the ark, and he'd been in it for some time, it came to pass in the 601st year and the first month. Now, he went on in the 600th year, and it was the 600th year and the second month, and he got off of the ark in the 600th year and the first month. So he was on that ark 11 months. You say, what's important about this? I'll tell you what's important about it. If you try to save this many million creatures, you'd have had to have 3 times as big a fleet as this just carrying the feed for them. I'm not too sure the sons of Noah would have wanted the big job they had to feed all these creatures, look after this whole bunch. But the reason why I pointed this out to you is to show you that not only is it mathematically impossible, it's biologically unfeasible, that in an ark the size of Noah's, that he could have brought about the survival of all the creatures upon the face of the earth. But let's take a look at the Upper Pamir Plateau. Its few various species that were clean, like the yak, the species of the Siberian tiger, a few of the mammoths that still may have ranged the upper portion of these hills. If there had been a collection of all the fauna that was existing in that land, there would have been no problem for Noah to have housed them, feed enough to feed them and his family for 11 months. I think you will note that by the biological factor that's involved here alone, and by the evidence of it, and with the realization that Moses wrote with an accuracy of tradition that the flood covered all that country, not the whole earth, and he wasn't required to gather up this vast zoological collection that some preachers have attributed to Noah. We wonder sometimes why people think that science and the Bible disagree. There's no disagreement between true science and the Bible. There's only disagreement between peoples that don't know the Bible and scientists operating on vague theories that have not yet been established. I point to you, therefore, that in this period of time, the sudden catastrophe that descended upon that area, of people mongrelized and whose seed was contaminated and whose violence and evil was now spreading, that the preservation of this branch of the white race and the house of Noah had not only been prophesied, but when Noah told them what would come and offered them entrance into the ark, they laughed at it. When finally God told Noah to go in, Noah and his sons and his wife and their wives went in. And you know, it said, God shut the door. You know why God shut the door? Because you're a silly bunch of people, and the first time the water started to come and somebody cried, let us in, you'd have thrown the door open and you'd have filled the craft with unassimilatable mongrels. Someone said, you know what I mean? God drowned those people. He drowned those people, my friends, because many of them were misplaced and unassimilatable and were descendants of angelic hosts that hadn't kept their first estate that moved in the demon world of Nephilim. They were Asiatics who had bowed their part to this plan and were seeking the destruction of your race, who they had been destroying and killing or absorbing continually. But this wasn't all the white race. Down in Egypt were the Hyksos of Job and Enoch. Down in Persia, where some of the alien seed which had migrated down there at the time, the line from which Enoch and Job had come, they were your kinsmen. They had already built some of the high monuments of measure, and during the time of Enoch, they did this as well. Now let me point this out. But after the flood, we have the record here concerning what transpired. And we are told that that Ham, Shem, and Japheth were the three sons of Noah. And we're told these are the generations of the sons of Noah. This is the 10th chapter of the book of Genesis. These are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And unto them were six sons born after the flood. This flood that covered all the mountaintops of that upper Tavian basin till it overflowed. And when the final earthquake at this period of time ended in this 11-month period, it opened up the waters from the Wang Ho of this great upper Pamir Plateau, and it went down the Peishan Rivers and into China, and down the Wang Ho Rivers, and the Chinese, with an accurate chronology for the time of the flood, for the year of Noah, and for the flood that came down the waters of the Chinese rivers, didn't drown everybody, but those that lived along the rivers were destroyed, record the splitting of the mountains and the water gushing out. Also, back in the history of Ur the Chaldees, they tell also about how the other ribbon end of the earthquake fault dumped waters out of that upper Tavian basin, how the waters came down through Turkestan, right down alongside the plains of Mesopotamia, and how the water was 70 feet deep in the river, and people and buildings were inundated that were close to the water level. And if you go down to the land of Ur, where Dr. Woolley did such remarkable work, you'll find the flood line waters from the river when the waters came out of the area where the flood was washing past and headed for the sea. Never bothered Egypt at all, because Egypt was not in the path of that dispersal of the water. Now, if the water had covered all of the earth, the water would have been over the high Sierras, and it would have been 6 miles deep off of Los Angeles. It tells us here in the scriptures how the waters receded from off of the face of the earth. So here we discover that the waters decreased continually until the 10th month. But the waters had returned from the earth continually, and after the 150 days, the water was somewhat abated, and the waters decreased continually until the 10th month, and in the 10th month on the first day, the tops of the mountains in that basin were seen. Now, where do you think if the water was 6 miles deep, it would have run off to? If the water was over everything, it couldn't go downhill or abate. There'd be no place for it run to. It couldn't be a runoff because the whole thing would have been covered, and it would have taken a great many years for it to have evaporated, and then there is a saturation point for atmosphere, and you would still have this water in a vast misty bath surrounding the world to this day. You could never have used up that much water, and I can assure you this, that every student of meteorology will tell you that there wasn't that much water, nor could there have been a saturation of that much water above the earth to have covered it to the depth of 6 miles. So we know that the Bible is accurate. We know that it was in that land where this thing occurred. We know, therefore, that the descendants of Noah came from Ham, Shem, and Japheth, his three sons. And therefore, I point out to you what the scripture says about Noah and his three sons. It says, these are the generations of the sons of Noah. And then it tells us about them. And it tells us about the fact that they were divided by these three sons and they went out upon the earth. The generations of the sons of Ham, Shem, and Japheth, and there was born a Japheth after the flood. It names Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, Tadish, the sons of Gomer, the Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarm, and so forth. And these were, and it says as it names these sons, and by these were the sons, were the lands and the islands, the various nations divided, and they went out among these peoples, and these races, and their tongues, after their families in the earth. Now, if you have a fair-fetten version of the Bible, which is a very accurate translation, it tells you that by these sons of Noah were the peoples of the earth in their lands and in their islands divided up because the sons and daughters of Noah settled down among them and had their own language, but they settled with peoples of many languages and many tongues. In other words, they settled all along the coast of the earth. Who was this? This, my friends, was the house of Japheth. They settled among Asiatic people. They went out among the Turok and eventually were absorbed among them. Now we note that of the sons of Ham, the sons of Ham were Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. Sons of Cush were Seba, Havilah, and so on, or down to, we come to Cush begat Nimrod. And he was a mighty power, a great hunter, a mighty rebel, and the builder of a great kingdom in the earth. Now let me tell you something about Nimrod. The sons of Noah, migrating the same route down by the Persian Gulf, started marching under the banners of the son of Cush, Nimrod, down to the ancient land of the plain of Shinar. And you know, Nimrod was very angry because the catastrophe in the flood had been caused by what they called the ancient hill peoples of the Sumerians. In fact, therefore, the peoples of Asia and Asiatics under the false Luciferian host had brought the condition that brought the flood and its result. And Nimrod marched down to where he knew cities of these people lived, his intent to conquer them. And it's a part of the ancient records, and we can show it to you as was known in the ancient records that follow in the story of the history of your race, which is carried out in the Zohar's records of the dealings of this people with God and what transpired. Now, we read here in the scriptures that Nimrod went down into this land where the plain of Shinar is, and he conquered Babel and Erech, Akkad, and Calneth in the land of Shinar. Now I want you to do some thinking. Here comes the grandson of Noah, the great-grandson of Noah, marches down to the plain of Shinar, one quarter of the way around the world, and he conquers four kingdoms whose empires reach into the periods before the flood. Proving the flood never touched this area. Now, there are those that try to tell you, and this is for the correction of clergy who think that they're doing God a favor, trying to hold something together that they're not supposed to be trying to put together, and they say, yes, all the Negroes came from Ham. Well, if that was so, then Nimrod would have been a Negro, and there never has been a Negro with wisdom and intelligence enough to put together four kingdoms and build an empire like ancient Ur of the Chaldees. And anyone who knows anything about it, and I can assure you that if you're a student of archaeology, you can look at the plates of ancient Sumeria. You can look at the records of ancient Ur of the Chaldees, and the people that dwelt there were not Negroes. It is true the mistake made by Nimrod were to take peoples of India and peoples of Asia and eventually, under the guidance of their flattery, to try to elevate him to a sense of false deity, to try to include all these peoples into a cosmopolitan metropolitan city called Ur the Chaldees. I want you to know that the prime minister of ancient Nimrod's kingdom was the father of Abraham, and Terah, the father of Abraham, descended from Seth, from Shem, the son of Noah. Now let me show you that in the genealogy of the house of Shem, we have Shem was the father of the children of Eber. Eber is the word from which the word Hebrew or Hebrew comes. Every white man today, who we know from remaining nations, is virtually descended from Shem and from the house of Shem. This was because, before we go through many years, the house of Japheth, which had settled in Asia, had been mongrelized and absorbed, and their seed can never be counted in the kingdom. No mongrelized seed can share in the inheritance pattern, and actually the names of some of these offsprings that had intermingled in Asia were to become the names of whole areas inside of Asia at a later time. Now, as far as Shem was concerned, his race was in relative racial purity. Terah, who was a descendant of Heber, remember this now, that Terah, who was the father of Abraham, was a descendant of Shem. But there was no hostility between Shem and the descendant of Ham. For here was Nimrod, a descendant of Ham, the emperor of Ur, and Terah was his prime minister, the father of Abram. I also know, as you can find in the book of Jasher, that until he was 12 years old, Abram, who was the child of Terah, was sent to the caves where Noah was now residing, having come down in the neighboring country, and he was educated by Noah in the caves where Noah was residing, showing the close proximity in the measures between Noah and this his definite, distinct relative, Abram, who is to become the great Abram of the Bible, Abraham, of the background of Isaac and Jacob, and of whom have emerged the Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Nordic, Basque, Lombard, and Germanic peoples in the earth. Therefore, when I tell you that all of the white race descended out of the house of Seth, the Enoch, Job line before the flood, already down in Egypt, and some of them still left from their migrations out of ancient Palestine from Jerusalem, which ancient city was destroyed by Sumerian Canaanites, I point out to you also that the other branch that descended from the survivors of the flood in the upper Tabian Basin and the already Aryan population of that Sethite house that had migrated across and even built Stonehenge in ancient Britain. And they were calling these people Phoenicians. Their ancient name and their identity were Phoenicians, and they identified them with the people from whom this mighty, now world-renowned man who had traveled out to God and back, known as Phoenoch or Enoch, came from. And the word Phoenician came from the greatest traveler of them all, Phoenoch. And the people identified with him, white race, masters of the science of the heavens and the sky, the children of Yahweh, the mighty Yah of the heavens, the Ra of faith, the children of Osiris, Lord of life and the resurrection, the Christ in the prophecies of Greece, the Krishna in the Vedic words out of India, the embodiment of whom was Yahshua or Jesus the Christ, you the children of God, thus identified again with your God, who was your Messiah. I point out to you, therefore, that it is important that we establish this clearly again with another set of measures in the Bible. If you come over to the 31st chapter of Ezekiel, which we've called your attention to before, and which we want to include in this message tonight, it tells us here that God spake unto Ezekiel, calling the exact day, in the 11th year, the third month, and the first day of the month, the word of Yahweh came to me and said, speak unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and his multitude. Now you tell it that the waters, that the Assyrian was the great and powerful, tall empire, like the redwood tree, the gargantuans of Lebanon, which are the same as the redwoods on your Pacific coast. You tell him that empires, which are symbolized as trees and racial streams as waters and rivers, that because of the strength of his Asiatic Terah Gray, the numbers of its peoples, its mighty waters that went out all over, there were many branches to its empire, including this great empire like the redwood trees. That the Assyrian in those days stretched over all the earth, and it tells us that all the people of all the races were virtually under the tree of the empire of Assyria. So it tells us, therefore, that in this day, he was the strongest of all the trees or empires, and all the other empires looked unto him in the days of Eden. In the days of Eden, it tells us here in this 31st chapter, the Assyrian-Sumerian Empire was the most powerful over all the earth. Now, what this is stating is the Asiatic peoples of ancient Sumeria, Assyria, were over all the earth, and the empires ruled over the earth in the days of Eden when Adam was placed on this earth. And go on and read it. 31st chapter of the book of Ezekiel. You can tell it to any preacher that doesn't understand this, that by no stretch of the imagination did Adam father these people over all the earth when he was put in Eden and didn't stay there very long either. Listen. And now you also, mighty Egypt, were a great power and a great tree. Your tree wasn't as great as the Assyrian. But as I brought the leaders and rulers of ancient Sumerian Empire even down between that time and this, I've brought them down and broken them in the earth. And I've sent them down to the netherworld with their leaders and their chieftains into perdition. I can bring you down there too. Now think this over. This declaration that God makes is a declaration of the antiquity of the Assyrian Empire before the days when Adam was in the earth, because it was over all the world. Now, Eden is the place where Egypt also existed. And I have already told you that Egypt saw Enoch and Job come in, build their pyramid, and tell about how they migrated from the sinking land that went down over 11,000 years ago in the last of the vestige of the sinking of that continent in the Atlantic. So the book of Ezekiel in its 31st chapter proves that there were empires over all the earth the days of Eden. Now I would take you back in this message on races, the pre-flood and post-flood period, to another passage which is very important in the book of Genesis. It deals with when Abram, who God told to get out of the land of Ur of the Chaldees because the city was now becoming a mongrelized city, the racial seed and the purity of God's kingdom had to be preserved. There could be no mixture, no racial mongrelization, and it had to be a pure seed. So he said, you get out of the land of Ur of the Chaldees. If necessary, you leave all your relatives and everybody else, and you get out because we're going to preserve racial purity here. And Abram got up and he left the land of Ur of the Chaldees. His father came along too, even left his place as prime minister to go. Just remember now, Terah was prime minister. So I point out that in this instance that Abram journeys, and the scripture tells us about how he comes in the course of his journey to a certain experience when Amorathiel, now listen to this, Amorathiel was a king of Shinar, Arioch was a king of Elazar, and Sheldalmer king of Elam, and Tidal king of the nation. Now if you start with the genealogy in the book of Genesis, which reads like a telephone directory of the descendants of Adam, you don't find any Amorathiel, and you don't find in those descendants any Tidal. You don't find the king here of Sodom, because these king lines were existent from the pre-Adamic world. But one of the most outstanding identifications here is this. Tidal, king of the nation. The early translation says Tidal, king of the land beneath the waters. You know, the word Tidal means water-swept land. And Tidal is king of the lands beneath the waters. So here when Abram was traveling, he moves into a great battlefield where all these kings are in battle. And it tells about all the kings, including the king of Bela, which is in Zoar. And they were battling for the gold of Ophir, the mighty ingots of the values which they had extracted out of caravans and out of gold from a portion of ancient Ghana. So rich were the ancient gold fields of Ghana that here were these kings fighting on the plains of Shal there for gold of Ophir. And here comes your race, embodied in this man Abram and his household, outnumbered but divinely protected. And it tells us that in this day, how the king of Elam and the king Tidal of the nations beneath the waters in Amorathiel, the king of Shinar and Arioch, and these four kings fought together in this great battle. Now, the reason why I'm reading this is not because of major interest in the battle, not in this message. I'm only interested in the fact that here are kings that had come from lines before Adam, still on the earth, the days of Abraham and after the flood. I want you to know that here's a king whose peoples had escaped from the sinking of the continent that's written about by Plato and is a part of ancient Egyptian history. And the Bible tells you about it. I just want to confirm to you the fact, for future reference, that all the peoples and races of Earth did not descend from Adam, and you were under no brotherly, biological, divine offspring law to amalgamate or integrate with all these peoples, but rather the law of God tells you to come out from among them and be separate and segregated and not intermingle with them. More than that, you've been told to preserve the holy seed and go back again to the Adamic era that is pointed out in the book of Genesis when God said, all these trees, the tree I have placed in the garden, that are herb trees and fruit trees with fruit, I have given you to eat. None of them are forbidden. You can eat of all these trees. But of the racial tree, the tree of knowledge, of good and of evil, thou shalt not eat. Thou cannot mix with the empires and the races of other peoples upon the face of the earth, or the Luciferian household which was in power. You cannot mix with Jews. You cannot mix with Asiatics. You cannot mix with Negroes. You cannot mix with the Luciferian house. You must carry forward your destiny and preserve this seed. So I point out that in Ezekiel, God proves these trees were races, and the waters of earth were their racial streams to make their empires according to their size. Yes, the Adamic household had a very special mission. This book is not the story of Asia. It's not the story of Africa. This book is the story of the Adamic race. It's the story of a divine transplanted household from heaven to earth, out of which God promised with waves of vision initiative would come the great technological ascendancy of your time, would come the great grace of the pronouncement of the true and living God, monotheism, one God above all, we as children, who pray as he taught us to pray, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. There is no room to finish this subject in one night. God does not want you to intermingle with the Negroes on any basis other than the fact that these are a different species and of a different order, and they can't measure up to your spiritual capacities and your intellectual abilities, and they would pollute the seed and destroy your race. Not because they came from Ham. They didn't come from Ham. There were Negroes by the millions in the earth before Ham, before Adam, and there still are. Now, as to Asia, you have no permission to mingle with Asia. Asia didn't come from Japheth. Asia absorbed Japheth and his descendants. But of the Shem line, except for annihilations and battles and wars, its race line has been preserved. There have been contamination in it in our day. We have watched some of these boys that we've moved out to the far-flung battlefields because their churches didn't tell them and their nation didn't make it clear, and they brought back Asiatics, they brought back Koreans into our land. But they're a very small minority, and they're not socially accepted in our land. And if the churches held to their responsibility, they would advise these marriages be dissolved and these foreign women and their children sent back to the land from whence they come. This is not only the order of God, but this is the grace of God for the preservation of kind and for the development of the earth. But one thing we should eradicate from areas of influence any mongrel seed in these United States. This is a part of the scourge of the race-mixing policy. In the days of your youth, you remember how a person who had a discriminative background was one who selected his companions, and the last thing that would have been thought about in the generations of yesterday would be the intermixing of the races. The person who did it was ostracized from society and was looked down upon, and his seed would never have been acceptable in the social order. This is as it should be, for by these balances of spiritual guidance and intuitive inbuilt law, God preserves the racial self-respect of your society. Now note, every biblical outpouring, every revival of Old and New Testament restores racial self-respect and a pledge to the fathers to preserve their posterity, and the background of their prosperity, posterity is to be brought into alignment. And the book of Malachi says the sons shall remember their fathers and the fathers shall remember their children. And God says, yes, and I will cleanse again the blood of my people. Sometimes we wonder why we have some of the chastening experiences we have, some of the struggles, some of the battles. So I want you to know that we sow sometimes these things we reap. But for the purpose of God, I wanted you to know that his kingdom come is divinely ordained. The triumph again of Christian society, the strength of the Western nations, leading the world when communism has been swept from the earth, when the mongrelizers don't surround the president, and when presidents are wiser than they are now.